Okay, we'll get started again. So, we'll start by looking at the basic architecture of GSM. So what are the main system components that we need in order to provide a cellular phone call or data transfer or whatever? And so we'll look at, again, we'll look at the components. We'll then have a look at the radio link aspects, which, as you might expect, are rather complex. Okay. And today, I would like to have a look at the channel structure that is used for GSM. And the basic idea of a channel, obviously, is pretty straightforward. You're just providing a link along which information can be passed. But the type of information that is passed along that link for GSM is sort of embedded in sort of what channel the information is passed along. Okay, so certain channels will be reserved for certain types of information, so data information versus control information. If you think about wired telephony networks, a similar thing happens. Certain channels are used for the control of the network. For GSM, it becomes a lot more complex, and we'll have a little look at that complexity today. And again, to start with, we're just going to have an overview of sort of how GSM systems are constructed. Okay. And as we sort of said earlier, the primary goal of GSM is to provide digital voice connectivity. And on top of this, it provides some simple data services as well. But the data services are provided in a connection-oriented fashion, not a packet switch fashion. Okay. It's the dominant standard worldwide, but not the only one, and it's quite complex. Okay. And there's 6,000 pages of, roughly 6,000 pages of standards associated with GSM. If you go to the library, there are textbook after textbook, or not even textbooks, but manuals after manuals after manuals, trying to describe all the ins and outs of GSM. So obviously what we're going to do here in this sort of one set of slides is try and give you an overview of what the major issues are and an idea of how they're dealt with. Okay. So it helps to just recall the basic operation of a cellular system. And so we looked at this last lecture, and the idea here is that we're trying to make a call, and so our base stations are what provides our mobile users with access into the network, and then for further connectivity, you have to go to some sort of back end. Here we called it an MTSO. We'll call it an MSC now. Okay. And we saw there were a number of procedures that had to be gone through to sort of achieve a voice connection. Okay. So we started with the user just tracking where they, what their location was and what base station they should attach to. when they wanted to make a call, they had to send that request to the base station, which then relayed it to this MTSO. The MTSO then attempted to locate the call receiver, and when the call receiver was located, then they accept the call. A circuit is formed from sender to base station, from base station to MTSO, from MTSO to a second base station, from second base station to receiver. And as an additional complication, then, as you move from cell to cell, you had to hand off from one base station to another. And obviously, you had to do this while maintaining your connectivity. Okay. So you can see there's a number of elements in here that have quite different functionality. The base stations, again, are providing an access point. The MTSOs are providing sort of a circuit, an actual connection. Okay. And so the GSM system is going to have a similar functionality in order to provide connectivity. Okay. And so our basic GSM architecture has three main components. We're going to be primarily concerned with two of them. It has the base station subsystem, and again, that's going to be what's mainly responsible for providing that radio link, so providing the access point for the end user. Okay. The switching subsystem then is going to be what manages connections. So not just the radio link is one portion of an overall connection in order to make a telephone call. And the switching subsystem is going to manage the overall connectivity. Okay. And so we're going to look at those and what their functionality. The last component is the operation and maintenance center, which provides sort of system maintenance, sort of monitors the system to, allows people to sort of assess the performance of the system, almost in offline capacity, and would also be responsible for things like billing, which is quite important to telephony companies, but we're not going to really worry about it here. Okay. So we have a mobile user or a mobile station, which is, again, just a device that's capable of radio transmission and reception, plus a subscriber identity modules, plus some form of identification, user identification. Okay. And that will interact at the first stage with the base station, and then the base station, of course, is responsible for relaying whatever requests it has farther on to make connections. I have the comment there, alphabet soup. So any time you step into the telephony world, the acronyms just abound. And so you just have to make the best of it. Okay. So, physically, space is divided up into coverage areas, And so your smallest unit, obviously, is the cell, and this indicates, again, what specific base station a user is going to use to connect back into the network. Okay. Location areas, then, are used for paging purposes. So we said, you know, when you were trying to call a mobile user, paging was used to find that mobile user. You don't want to have to page every cell in the network. And so user location is tracked to the detail of the location area. And then within that location area, you have to use the paging to find out exactly what cell the user's in. Okay. Any location area is going to be covered by one MSC, so one switching system, one unit within the switching system, and the MSC additionally may have multiple location areas. So they might, cover more than a single location area. And then the entire mobile network is comprised of a number of MSCs, which are all then used by or owned by a single entity, okay, a single network operator. Okay. Each of the systems and subsystems communicates through an interface. And so the interface would be the protocols which govern the communication between, again, various portions of the system. And so, again, your mobile communicates to a base station, and that communication is achieved over the UM interface. And again, that covers all the protocol by which that communication occurs. The base station then communicates back to the BSC over an interface. And the main sort of addition there is sort of reliability. The BSC communicates to the MSC, which communicates with various components in order to make the connection. If you're doing handover, you would have MSC to MSC handover, and so that's covered by an interface. If you're connecting into, say, the telephony network, well, you have another interface which, again, passes the data to a gateway for further to be forwarded into the rest of the network. Okay. And again, the goal is going to be to provide an end-to-end link from our mobile into some backhaul network. Okay, and the character of the individual links that are needed to make up that end-to-end link is significantly different. So again, here at the one end, you're dealing with a radio link with complex channel management issues. And then as you move back through the network, you're dealing with wired links. And again, when you get to the telephony end of things, you have, again, circuit switch channel allocation. So how you provide that end-to-end link is, again, a bit complex. Okay, so that just summarizes what various links do. I've, again, highlighted a few of them, but any of those arrows represents a different interface, okay? And so all of the sort of communication between various pairs of devices is governed by different interfaces. Again, the red are just ones that I've highlighted as sort of interest to us. Okay. So again, we have these three components, the base station system, the BSS, and the switching subsystem, which are the two we're going to concentrate on as sort of being core to providing circuit switched connectivity for us. And so we'll look a bit at what each of these does. And so the base station subsystem is responsible for connecting the end user to the MSC, okay? So for the purpose of the MSC arranging a circuit for the user, okay? The base station subsystem has two components or two types of components. It has base stations or base transmission stations, which again are providing the radio connectivity with the end user. And then it has the base station controller, which is sort of managing a number of these base stations. And when we say managing, it's again dealing with all of the sort of aspects that we've talked about before of how you configure cells, how you allocate radio frequency within cells, how you sort of allocate the power within cells, how you achieve handover from one station to another as you move from cell to cell. Okay. So you need intelligence, a centralized intelligence to handle that. Okay, so again, the user will connect to the BTS, and that will get relayed through the BSC to the MSC. Okay, now you have your switching subsystem, which has lots of components. At the core of it, sort of the main intelligence of it is contained in the MSC, the Mobile Switching Center. Okay, and the responsibility of the MSC is to set up and maintain connections. Okay. And so it will handle all of the user's call requests. It will do dynamic resource management, so amongst BSCs. It will have to, if you move from the coverage of one MSC to another, it will have to coordinate with the neighboring MSC to perform handover. It will have to interface with external networks, and that interface will be achieved through gateways. So you have a gateway which is going to interface with the telephone network, and a gateway which will interface with the internet. Okay. And so again, the MSC is the brains of the operation, and it manages the connections. Okay. Now, various data is required to manage the connections, so you have a number of databases attached to the switching subsystem as well. Okay. And so you have the home location register, the visitor location register, the authentication center, and the equipment register. Okay, and all of these are going to store user data, which allows the MSC to sort of perform various functions having to do with connectivity. Okay. If we look, we'll work our way up, actually. If we look at the equipment identification register, that gives us information about the identity of equipment. And so if a phone is reported lost or stolen, or if there's some other problem with it, the MSC, if the MSC gets a connection request from that phone, it first consults the register, and if there's a problem, it denies that request. Okay. Similarly, the authentication center stores information about the user that allows the MSC to determine if the user has valid access to the network. So again, when a user sort of again powers on, the MSC will check the identity of the user to make sure that they have should be connected to the network. Okay. The home location register is used. So then the home location register and the visitor location register are sort of used to maintain ongoing data about the user. The home location register is a permanent store of data about the user. And the visitor location register then is temporary information that's needed as users move from one MSC to another to maintain connections. Okay. So the home location register stores, service profiles about the user, so what services they're entitled to, and is periodically updated about sort of the status of the user within the network. And so it'll keep information about the current visitor location register so that, again, that information can then be used if we need to locate the user. Okay. The visitor location register then is attached to a given MSC, and it keeps track of what information, temporary information, you need to provide connectivity. Okay, so it will track, say, the paging area of a given user, and that will change periodically. Okay. So as we said already, in order to provide connectivity into the wired network, you have a number of gateways. And so the MSC will, again, relay information from the user, from the end user into one of these gateways to be forwarded along the network. Okay. Additionally, we have the message center, which again provides for these fairly basic data services we said the GSM provided. And we have a mobile service node, which handles sort of intelligent network services, so the call conferencing, stuff like that, stuff that's a little beyond just the basic provision of a circuit. Okay. So, finally, we have the OMC, the Operation Maintenance Center, and as I said before, this is monitors the sort of performance of the network and deals with any failures within the network, and also handles things like billing. Okay. So, just to give a couple of examples of how sort of the various subsystems come into play, we can look at accessing the network. Okay, and this is, again, what happens when you turn your phone on. Okay. Unlike sort of wired telephones, landlines, where you assume if, you know, whoever picks up the receiver has authorization to be there. The mobile user has to be identified, and then again, information about the mobile user's location has to be stored, and it has to be updated. Okay. So the SIM card in the mobile device is used to maintain the user's identity, and the home location register uses the SIM card then to uses the SIM identity to store store information about the user. So it will store where the user is, again, what services they're entitled to. Okay. When the phone is turned on, it searches for the nearest base station to make contact with. And then when that contact is made, information has to be relayed to the switching subsystem in terms of updating the visitor location register with the current information about the user. Okay. Okay, if we think about receiving a call, and in this case, receiving it from a landline, then the call enters through the gateway, and the gateway has to check for the current location of the receiver, which will be, so it consults the home location register, which will know where the visitor location, if there is a visitor location register, so if there is, if the mobile is currently locatable, it'll know where to locate it. Okay. And so it's either sort of diverted or not around, or it's there, and if it's there, then then a connection can be made to the MSC, the visiting MSC. So the MSC controlling the current, controlling the region where the user currently is. Okay. And then the MSC can find the location area of the visitor, of the, or I should say the receiver, and paging can occur to locate the receiver, and so sort of again a number of BTSs will sort of send out paging signals, and if the receiver responds, well, they're located and we can set up a pathway along that connection. Okay, making a call is similar. Your sender then signals the base station. The base station has to link to the MSC. The MSC checks, again, the validity of the user to the right of the user to make this connection, and then it establishes a path through the GMSC. And if they get a response, then that connection is set up. Okay, so that's the basic functionality of GSM and the blocks that you need to achieve that functionality. The details are of how that is actually accomplished are sort of numerous. Okay. And the first aspect that we'll look at is the management of radio links. Okay, and again, this is the idea of how do we structure our channels to provide this connectivity. And again, it's not as simple as just assigning a channel and that's that. Channels have to be shared between data transmission and control information, and that sharing is reasonably complex. Okay, so that's sort of one of the biggest aspects. Additional to that, there are a lot of practical issues having to deal with just the radio transmission system. So say you have your channel now, how do you encode? How do you deal with errors? Everything we sort of looked at initially in terms of a transmission system has sort of very specific format for the GSM system. Okay, and so we'll say a few words about sort of exactly how GSM implements these sort of various blocks within a transmission system. Okay. But first, just to look at the channels. The physical channels are straightforward enough. As we said before, GSM uses a combination of time and frequency division multiple access. And what this means is that they divide their radio spectrum into a number of channels. Typically, you think of these channels as being paired into an uplink and downlink pair. Okay, and they link them quite specifically. Okay, and so in addition to dividing the system up according to frequencies, GSM also divides time into time slots. So for each frequency, or for each carrier frequency, time is divided up into 8 time slots. So you get 8 additional channels, essentially, for every frequency. Okay. And so, obviously, that gives you your 8 by 124 channels. And access is achieved by sort of allocating one of those channels. Okay. These time slot frequency channels are referred to in GSM as physical channels. So again, they're the unit at which you can transmit your signal. Okay. And as we said before, that the frequencies are paired into uplink and downlink directions. Okay. And time slots are also distinguished for the uplink and downlink direction. The uplink is, or the downlink is delayed by 3 compared to the uplink, so you're using different time slots for uplink and downlink. This means, again, that you're not going to be transmitting uplink and downlink information on the same channel at the same time. Okay. And so it just makes it a little easier to handle sort of the duplex connection. Now, that's straightforward enough. Where the complication comes in now is in the use to which these channels are put. And a channel is used either to transmit data or speech or a voice connection or signaling information. Okay. The complication is that no specific physical channel is dedicated to any one of these uses. So if you pick any physical channel, at some points it might be transmitting data. At some point it might be transmitting a control signal. Okay. So channels are now distinguished according to what they're doing at a given time. Okay. And so we have the idea of logical channels. And so a logical channel is essentially a physical channel plus what's it doing at a given time. And what it's doing at a given time is regulated sort of by a periodicity. So every n times, it will be used to send a control signal. And the rest of the time, it'll be sending data, for instance. Okay. So what we have to do is we have to distinguish the tasks. So the types of control information that need to be sent. And again, that gives you, and then the times at which these types of control information will be sent. Okay. And so again, just to have a look at this, we can look at what we'll pick a single carrier frequency, and so that carrier frequency is then divided up into these 8 time slots, and so you get sequences of these. We call that division a frame, and you get sequences of these frames being transmitted. Okay. And so within that frame, you can look at an individual time slot. So in this case, time slot 5. And what you will see is that at certain times, it's going to transmit a voice connection, for instance. But then at other times, it'll transmit control information. Okay. And as long as those times are sort of well-known and well-regulated, the endpoints can interpret the information that's coming out in the appropriate way. So it'll know, this is a piece of data, it'll know, or a piece of voice transmission, it'll know that, this is a control signal. And it'll act appropriately according to what it is. Okay. So again, we have the physical channel, which is just the time slot transmitted at a certain frequency. But then that time slot is sort of further, or that physical channel is further subdivided into logical channels. So again, it's given different purposes at different times within that transmission sequence. Okay. So to have an example, again, our connection request, the mobile station is going to look for a certain time slot, and it's going to broadcast the request within its request for connectivity within that time slot. Okay. And so, the time slots will be allocated depending on sort of the needs of the system. Okay. So, what are the basic purposes to which types of signals we need to send? There are 4 main types. First is traffic. So we have traffic channels, and these are just sending either speech or data. We have broadcast channels, and these are used for sort of regulating the radio aspects of the channels, so between end users and the base station. We have common control channels, which are going to be used for call setups. And we have dedicated control channels, which will be used for maintaining specific connections. Okay. So traffic channels transmit at, they provide a certain transmission rates, so they allow voice to be transmitted at 13 kilobits per second. They actually transmit at a greater data rate, but we have channel coding used, so there's a lot of sort of redundancy added in for error correction purposes. Okay. And they also allow for a half-rate speech as well. Okay. So control information can be interleaved with that data traffic. Okay. And so things get a little more complicated here. I'm just going to sort of throw it in. We'll summarize it later. But we define, so our frame was our eight time slots. And so we now define groups of 26 of these frames. And dedicate one of those frames within the 26 to transmitting control information. Okay. So most of the time, these frames are going to transmit data or sort of voice traffic, but at some points they're going to transmit control information. Okay. Okay. Broadcast channels, again, allow, handle sort of the radio transmission aspects of connectivity, and their signals sent from the base station to the mobile user to, again, just allow them to synchronize to adjust their power levels to find the base station, etc. Okay. And they are always located in the first time slot in the downlink direction. And they are further subdivided into sort of a number of functions. We have a frequency correction channel that allows the synchronization to a local oscillator. So again, just synchronization of the signal. And that is transmitted every 10 frames. We have a synchronization channel, which synchronizes, provides time synchronization, and that's again transmitted every 10 frames, and it follows the frequency correction channel. So one frame you have the frequency correction channel, well, I should say one frame in TS0 you have the frequency correction channel. In the next frame in TS0, you have the synchronization channel. Okay. Broadcast control lets the user know the identity of the base station and whether channels are available and what channels are available, and that's sent in frames 2 to 5. Okay. And so, again, what we see is we get this subdivision of our physical channel. Our physical channel is TS0 on a certain carrier, and then that's being subdivided up to different purposes. Okay. The common control channels are used for creating connections, and again, you have a number of functions that you need to do. You page, you allow the user to respond to that page, you inform the user of access, okay, and that they have access and what channel they can proceed on. Okay, so again, now we're into more managing connectivity. Okay, and so these channels are also shared with the broadcast channels. And again, they're slotted in when the broadcast channel doesn't need the time slot. Okay. So what we have is two logical channels, which again have a lot of logical sub-functions, are using the same time slot. And so in order to do this, we have multiplexing, and we divide the sequence of frames into 51 frame multi-frames, and that provides sort of a cycle. And at various points within this multi-frame, time slot zero is going to be used for one purpose or another. Okay, so as we said, our FCCH is used every 10 frames. Our SCH, our synchronization then, is used, takes the next frame every 10 frames. And we also, and then we have our other broadcast control functions go into 2 through 5, slots 2 through 5. And then the rest can be used for connection control. And so it's used for, and then depending on which slot is it is, it's used for various aspects of the connection control. Okay. So what we see is that the system, by knowing where you are within this multi-frame, knows how to interpret the signal that's coming in. Okay. And the last sort of logical channel we have is our dedicated control channels. And again, these can be subdivided into a number of sub-functions. And so we have our standalone dedicated control channel, which ensures, which gives you connectivity during sort of various control phases. And again, uses sort of specific time slots. We have our slow associated control channel, which is used sort of while a connection is up and running to give the end user various information to improve the connection. So what power level they should be using, keeping the timing, etc. And then we have a fast associated control channel, which is used for sort of emergency sort of control. Now, all of these, again, have specific time slots associated with them. Okay. And so, again, within the multi-frame, we've got all of these we're using time slot 1 and dividing the time slot 1 up according to its purpose. So it's on a different slot than our other control. Okay, so that's complicated, but it does again give you it allows the system to sort of know how to interpret data that's coming in on a given physical channel at a given time. Okay. So we've already seen that sort of it's not enough to just look at the physical channels and just the time slot by frequency division. Additionally, the signaling within the time slots varies depending on what the function is, so depending on what sort of control or what sort of signal is being sent. The default is that in any time slot, 148 bits is transmitted, and typically these are divided up, let's just say that the 148 bits is transmitted. In some cases, less bits are transmitted, and so this is done, and the use of this is in access requests, and it's done to try and minimize collisions. Okay. And so there are additional, within this, the bits transmitted, there are additional, there's an additional guard time to try and sort of, again, keep the system synchronized. Okay. So the time slot is, again, divided up into sort of bits and guard. We've seen that there's sort of then a complex arrangement of time slots as well. We start with the 8 time slots constituting a frame, which repeat. And then we saw that, again, for the purpose of providing these logical channels, frames are packaged up into multi-frames. Okay. And naturally, just to be difficult, depending on what sort of channels you have, the multi-frames are slightly different. So traffic and control channels use a 26-frame multi-frame. So remember that the 12th frame in that was control data. And the broadcast channels use a 51-frame multi-frame. Okay. So in order to sort of synchronize, everything, well, you want a periodicity. The only period you can come up with for that is 26 times 51. Okay. So a sequence of 1,326 frames is referred to as a super frame, and it's sort of the signaling cycle for the whole system. Okay, when you go from frame 0 to frame 1,326, you've covered the whole signaling possibilities for the entire system. Okay. So just to not, make things too simple, there is an additional hyperframe, which is 2,048 superframes, and this is the highest level of framing, the highest unit within the hierarchy. And this is used for various sort of esoteric encryption purposes. Okay. So just to summarize it all then, you have your hyperframe, which again is just used for encryption. You have superframes, which are divided up slightly differently depending on whether you're talking about data channels or broadcast control channels. Within every superframe, you have multiframes, and so that the multiframes represent sort of the cycle of either the data channels or the cycle of the broadcast control channels. And then within each multi-frame, you have a number of frames. And depending which frame you are within a multi-frame, the purpose of the channel is different. It'll be different various aspects of control will be covered. And then finally, within each frame, you have time slots, and those time slots are devoted to bit transmission and sort of keeping the signal synchronized as well. And so depending on what sort of a what the logical channel is at the time, they'll have slightly different formatting again. Okay. And so just to sort of give a little more detail on that lowest level, the bursts, there are five possible types of bursts. So a data burst, or well, a normal burst, which is data plus most of the signaling, F and S bursts, which sort of are for the FCCH and the SCH respectively, and access bursts and idle bursts. And again, what we see is that the structure of the bursts is slightly different in each case. Okay. Okay, so just to summarize all of that, again, sort of closest to user understanding are the logical channels. Those are divided into traffic channels and that should be control channels. And there are various types of control channels, and they are further subdivided into various purposes. And depending on what the purpose is, you will have different sorts of bursts transmitted. And so, again, this is all sort of embedded in, and sort of distinguishing the logical channels is all embedded within this superframe structure. So we have at the top level the hyperframe, which again is only used for encryption. Then the hyperframe is composed of superframes, which represent your entire signaling cycle, so for both the data channels and the signaling channels, you've gone through an entire cycle. And then within that superframe, you have a different number of multiframes, depending on, again, whether it's a data or a control channel. And positioning within the multiframe indicates what the logical channel is at any given point. So that is complex, and it takes a while to of sort of sitting down and thinking about it and scratching your heads to see that it's not that unreasonable a thing to do. So again, I think I'll stop the lecture here. Let you guys go off and think about that. And we will take it up at this point or deal with various other radio aspects and call control aspects of GSM in the next lecture.